Jace and Simon both wound up in the infirmary, but only Isabel was fussing over either of them when Clary, who'd gone to clean herself up, came in a few hours later. Hodge had fixed the swelling bruise on her arm, and 20 minutes in the shower had gotten most of the ground and asphalt out of her skin, but she still felt raw and aching. Alec, sitting on the windowsill and looking like a thundercloud, scowled as the door shut behind her. "Oh, it's you." She ignored him. "Hodge says he's on his way, and he hopes you can both manage to cling to your flickering sparks of life until he gets here," she told Simon and Jace. Or something like that. "I wish he'd hurry," Jace said crossly. He was sitting up in bed against a pair of fluffed white pillows, still wearing his filthy clothes. "Why, does it hurt?" Clary asked.
"No, I have a high pain threshold. In fact, it's less of a threshold and more of a large and tastefully decorated foyer, but I do get easily bored."
He squinted at her.
"Do you remember back at the hotel when you promised that if we lived, you'd get dressed up in a nurse's outfit and give me a sponge bath?"
"Actually, I think you misheard," Clary said. "It was Simon who promised you the sponge bath." Jace looked involuntarily over at Simon, who smiled at him widely.
"As soon as I'm back on my feet, handsome."
"I knew we should have left you a rat," said Jace.
Clary laughed and went over to Simon, who seemed acutely uncomfortable surrounded by dozens of pillows and with blankets heaped over his legs. Clary sat down on the edge of Simon's bed. "How are you feeling?"
Like someone massaged me with a cheese grater," Simon said, wincing as he pulled his legs up. "I broke a bone in my foot. It was so swollen Isabel had to cut my shoe off."
"Glad she's taking good care of you." Clary let a small amount of acid creep into her voice. Simon leaned forward, not taking his eyes off Clary.
"I want to talk to you."
Clary nodded in half-reluctant agreement. "I'm going to my room. Come and see me after Hodge fixes you up, okay?"
"Sure."
To her surprise, he leaned forward and kissed her on the cheek. It was a butterfly kiss, a quick brush of lips on skin, but as she pulled away, she knew she was blushing. Probably, she thought, standing up, because of the way everyone else was staring at them. Out in the hallway, she touched her cheek in bemusement. A peck on the cheek didn't mean much, but it was so out of character for Simon. Maybe he was trying to make a point to Isabel? Men, Clary thought. They were so baffling. And Jace doing his wounded prince routine? She'd left before he could start complaining about the thread count of the sheets. "Clary." She turned around in surprise. Alec was loping down the hall after her, hurrying to catch up. He stopped when she did.
"I need to talk to you."
She looked at him in surprise.
"What about?"
He hesitated. With his pale skin and dark blue eyes, he was as striking as his sister. But unlike Isabel, he did everything he could to downplay his looks. The frayed sweaters and the hair that looked as if he had cut it himself in the dark were only part of it. He looked uncomfortable in his own skin.
"I think you should leave. Go home," he said.
She'd known he didn't like her, but it still felt like a slap. "Alec, the last time I was home, it was infested with Forsaken and Raveners, with fangs. Nobody wants to go home more than I do, but
you must have relatives you can stay with."
There was a tinge of desperation in his voice.
"No. Besides, Hodge wants me to stay," she said shortly. "He can't possibly. I mean, not after what you've done." "What I've done?"
He swallowed hard.
"You almost got Jace killed." "I almost... What are you talking about? Running off after your friend like that. Do you know how much danger you put him in? Do you know..."
"Him?
You mean Jace?"
Clary cut him off in mid-sentence.
"For your information, the whole thing was his idea. He asked Magnus where the lair was. He went to the church to get weapons. If I hadn't come with him, he would have gone anyway." "You don't understand," Alec said. "You don't know him. I know him. He thinks he has to save the world. He'd be glad to kill himself trying. Sometimes I think he even wants to die, but that doesn't mean you should encourage him to do it."
"I don't get it," she said.
"Jace is a Nephilim. This is what you do. You rescue people, you kill demons.
You put yourselves in danger. How was last night any different?
Alec's control shattered.
Because he left me behind, he shouted. Normally I'd be with him, covering him, watching his back, keeping him safe. But you, you're dead weight, a mundane.
He spit the word out as if it were an obscenity.
No, Clary said. I'm not. I'm Nephilim, just like you.
His lip curled up at the corner.
Maybe, he said, but with no training, no nothing, you're still not much use, are you? Your mother brought you up in the mundane world, and that's where you belong. Not here, making Jace act like he isn't one of us, making him break his oath to the Clave, making him break the law. Newsflash, Clary snapped. I don't make Jace do anything. He does what he wants. You ought to know that.
He looked at her as if she were an especially disgusting kind of demon he'd never seen before.
You mundanes are completely selfish, aren't you? Have you no idea what he's done for you? What kind of personal risks he's taken? I'm not just talking about his safety. He could lose everything. He already lost his father and mother. Do you want to make sure he loses the family he's got left as well?
Clary recoiled. Rage rose up in her like a black wave. Rage against Alec, because he was partly right, and rage against everything and everyone else. Against the icy road that had taken her father away from her before she was born. Against Simon for nearly getting himself killed. Against Jace for being a martyr and for not caring whether he lived or died. Against Luke for pretending he cared about her when it was all a lie. And against her mother for not being the boring, normal, haphazard mother she'd always pretended to be, but someone else entirely. Someone heroic and spectacular and brave whom Clary didn't know at all. Someone who wasn't there now when Clary needed her desperately.
You should talk about selfish, she hissed so viciously that he took a step back. You couldn't care less about anyone in this world except yourself, Alec Lightwood. No wonder you've never killed a single demon, because you're too afraid.
Alec looked stunned.
Who told you that? Jace.
He looked as if she'd slapped him.
He wouldn't. He wouldn't say that.
He did. She could see how she was hurting him, and it made her glad. Someone else ought to be in pain for a change.
You can rant all you want about honor and honesty and how mundanes don't have any of either, but if you were honest, you'd admit this tantrum is just because you're in love with him. It doesn't have anything to do with...
Alec moved blindingly fast. A sharp crack resounded through her head. He had shoved her against the wall so hard that the back of her skull had struck the wood paneling. His face was inches from hers, eyes huge and black.
Don't you ever, he whispered, mouth a blanched line, ever say anything like that to him, or I'll kill you. I swear on the angel, I'll kill you.
The pain in her arms where he gripped her was intense. Against her will, she gasped. He blinked, as if he were waking up out of a dream, and let her go, jerking his hands away like her skin had burned him. Without a word, he spun and hurried back toward the infirmary. He was lurching as he walked, like someone drunk or dizzy. Clary rubbed her sore arms, staring after him, appalled at what she'd done. Good job, Clary. Now you've really made him hate you. She should have fallen instantly into bed, but despite her exhaustion, sleep remained out of reach. Eventually, she pulled her sketch pad out of her backpack and started drawing, propping the tablet against her knees. Idle scribbles at first, a detail from the crumbling facade of the Vampire Hotel, a fanged gargoyle with bulging eyes. An empty street, a single lamppost casting a yellow pool of illumination, a shadowy figure poised at the edge of the light. She drew Raphael in his bloody white shirt with the scar of the cross on his throat. And then she drew Jace standing on the roof, looking down at the 10-story drop below. Not afraid, but as if the fall challenged him, as if there were no empty space he could not fill with his belief in his own invincibility. As in her dream, she drew him with wings that curved out behind his shoulders in an arc, like the wings of the angel statue in the Bone City. She tried to draw her mother last. She had told Jace she didn't feel any different after reading the gray book, and it was mostly true.
Now, though, as she tried to visualize her mother's face, she realized there was one thing that was different in her memories of Jocelyn. She could see her mother's scars, the tiny white marks that covered her back and shoulders as if she had been standing in a snowfall. It hurt, knowing that the way she'd always seen her mother all her life had been a lie. She slid the sketch pad under her pillow, eyes burning. There was a tap on the door, soft, hesitant. She scrubbed hastily at her eyes. "Come in." It was Simon. She hadn't really focused on what a mess he was. He hadn't showered, and his clothes were torn and stained, his hair tangled. He hesitated in the doorway, oddly formal. She scooted sideways, making room for him on the bed. There was nothing strange about sitting in bed with Simon. They'd slept over at each other's houses for years, made tents and forts with the blankets when they were small, stayed up reading comics when they were older. "You found your glasses," she said. One lens was cracked.
"They were in my pocket. They came through better than I would have expected. I'll have to write a nice note to lens crafters."
He settled beside her gingerly. "Did Hodge fix you up?" He nodded.
"Yeah, I still feel like I've been worked over with a tire iron, but nothing's broken. Not anymore."
He turned to look at her. His eyes behind the ruined glasses were the eyes she remembered, dark and serious, ringed by the kind of lashes boys didn't care about and girls would kill for.
"Clary, that you came for me, that you would risk all that."
"Don't." She held up a hand awkwardly. "You would have done it for me."
"Of course," he said, without arrogance or pretension. "But I always thought that was the way things were, with us. You know."
She scrambled around to face him, puzzled. "What do you mean?"
"I mean," said Simon, as if he were surprised to find himself explaining something that should have been obvious, "I've always been the one who needed you more than you needed me."
"That's not true." Clary was appalled.
"It is," Simon said with the same unnerving calm. "You've never seemed to really need anyone, Clary. You've always been so contained. All you've ever needed is your pencils and your imaginary worlds. So many times I've had to say things 6, 7 times before you'd even respond. You were so far away. And then you'd turn to me and smile that funny smile, and I'd know you'd forgotten all about me and just remembered. But I was never mad at you. Half of your attention is better than all of anyone else's."
She tried to catch at his hand, but got his wrist. She could feel the pulse under his skin. "I only ever loved 3 people in my life," she said. "My mom and Luke and you. And I've lost all of them except you. Don't ever imagine you aren't important to me. Don't even think it."
"My mom says you only need 3 people you can rely on in order to achieve self-actualization," said Simon.
His tone was light, but his voice cracked halfway through actualization.
"She says you seem pretty self-actualized."
Clary smiled at him ruefully. "Did your mom have any other words of wisdom about me?"
"Yeah."
He returned her smile with one just as crooked.
"But I'm not going to tell you what they were."
"No fair keeping secrets."
"Whoever said the world was fair?"
In the end, they lay against each other as they had when they were children, shoulder to shoulder, Clary's leg thrown over Simon's. Her toes came to just below his knee. Flat on their backs, they stared up at the ceiling as they talked, a habit left over from the time when Clary's ceiling had been covered with paste-on glow-in-the-dark stars. Where Jace had smelled like soap and limes, Simon smelled like someone who'd been rolling around the parking lot of a supermarket, but Clary didn't mind.
"The weird thing is," Simon wound a curl of her hair around his finger, "I was joking with Isabel about vampires right before it all happened. Just trying to get her to laugh, you know? What freaks out Jewish vampires? Silver stars of David? Chopped liver? Checks for $18?
Clary laughed. Simon looked gratified.
Isabel didn't laugh.
Clary thought of a number of things she wanted to say and didn't say them. "I'm not sure that's Isabel's kind of humor." Simon cut a sideways glance at her under his lashes.
"Is she sleeping with Jace?"
Clary's squeak of surprise turned into a cough.
She glared at him.
Ew, no, they're practically related. They wouldn't do that.
She paused.
I don't think so, anyway.
Simon shrugged. Not like I care, he said firmly.
Sure you don't.
I don't. He rolled onto his side. You know, initially I thought Isabel seemed, I don't know, cool, exciting, different. Then at the party, I realized she was actually crazy.
Clary slit her eyes at him. Did she tell you to drink the blue cocktail?
He shook his head. That was all me. I saw you go off with Jace and Alec and, I don't know, you looked so different from usual. You seemed so different. I couldn't help thinking you'd changed already, and this new world of yours would leave me out. I wanted to do something that would make me more a part of it. So when the little green guy came by with the tray of drinks, Clary groaned.
You're an idiot.
I've never claimed otherwise. Sorry.
Was it awful?
Being a rat? No. First, it was disorienting. I was suddenly at ankle level with everyone. I thought I'd drunk a shrinking potion, but I couldn't figure out why I had this urge to chew used gum wrappers.
Clary giggled. No, I mean the vampire hotel. Was that awful?
Something flickered behind his eyes. He looked away. No, I don't really remember much between the party and landing in the parking lot.
Probably better that way.
He started to say something, but was arrested mid-yawn. The light in the room had slowly faded. Disentangling from Simon and the bedsheets, Clary got up and pushed aside the window curtains. Outside, the city was bathed in the reddish glow of sunset. The silvery roof of the Chrysler Building, 50 blocks downtown, glowed like a poker left too long in the fire.
The sun's setting. Maybe we should look for some dinner.
There was no response. Turning, she saw that Simon was asleep, his arms folded under his head, legs sprawled. She sighed, went over to the bed, plucked his glasses off, and set them on the night table. She couldn't count the times he'd fallen asleep with them on and been woken by the sound of cracking lenses.
Now where am I gonna sleep?
Not that she minded sharing a bed with Simon, but he hadn't exactly left her any room. She considered poking him awake, but he looked so peaceful. Besides, she wasn't sleepy. She was just reaching for the sketch pad under the pillow when a knock sounded on the door. She padded barefoot across the room and turned the doorknob quietly. It was Jace, clean, in jeans and a gray shirt, his washed hair a halo of damp gold. The bruises on his face were already fading from purple to faint gray, and his hands were behind his back.
"Were you asleep?" he asked.
There was no contrition in his voice, only curiosity.
"No."
Clary stepped out into the hallway, pulling the door shut behind her.
"Why would you think that?"
He eyed her baby blue cotton tank top and sleep shorts set.
"No reason."
"I was in bed most of the day," she said, which was technically true. Seeing him, her jitter level had shot up about 1,000%, but she saw no reason to share that information.
"And what about you? Aren't you exhausted?"
He shook his head.
"Much like the postal service, demon hunters never sleep. Neither snow nor rain nor heat nor gloom of night stays these."
"You'd be in major trouble if gloom of night did stay you," she pointed out. He grinned. Unlike his hair, his teeth weren't perfect. An upper incisor was slightly endearingly chipped. She gripped her elbows. It was chilly in the hallway and she could feel goosebumps starting up her arms.
"What are you doing here anyway?"
"Here as in your bedroom, or here as in the great spiritual question of our purpose here on this planet. If you're asking whether it's all just a cosmic coincidence or there's a greater meta-ethical purpose to life, well, that's a puzzler for the ages. I mean, simple ontological reductionism is clearly a fallacious argument, but..."
"I'm going back to bed."
Clary reached for the doorknob. He slid nimbly between her and the door.
"I'm here," he said, "because Hodge reminded me it was your birthday."
Clary exhaled in exasperation.
"Not until tomorrow."
"There's no reason not to start celebrating now."
She eyed him. "You're avoiding Alec and Isabel." He nodded.
"Both of them are trying to pick fights with me."
"For the same reason?"
I couldn't tell.
He glanced furtively up and down the hallway.
Hodge, too. Everyone wants to talk to me, except you. I bet you don't want to talk to me.
No, said Clary. I want to eat. I'm starving. He brought out his hand from behind his back. In it was a slightly crumpled paper bag.
I sneaked some food from the kitchen when Isabel wasn't looking.
Clary grinned. A picnic? It's a little late for Central Park, don't you think?
It's full of... He waved a hand. Fairies, I know.
I was going to say muggers, said Clary. Though I pity the mugger who goes after you.
That is a wise attitude, and I commend you for it, said Jace, looking gratified. But I wasn't thinking of Central Park. How about the greenhouse?
Now? At night? Won't it be dark? He smiled as if at a secret.
Come on. I'll show you.
Chapter 17. The Midnight Flower. In the half-light, the big empty rooms they passed through on their way to the roof looked as deserted as stage sets, the white-draped furniture looming up out of the dimness like icebergs through fog. When Jace opened the greenhouse door, the scent hit Clary, soft as the padded blow of a cat's paw, the rich dark smell of earth and the stronger soapy scent of night-blooming flowers, moonflowers, white angel's trumpet, 4 o'clocks, and some she didn't recognize, like a plant bearing a star-shaped yellow blossom whose petals were medallioned with golden pollen. Through the glass walls of the enclosure, she could see the lights of Manhattan burning like cold jewels.
Wow. She turned slowly, taking it in. It's so beautiful here at night.
Jace grinned. And we have the place to ourselves. Alec and Isabel hate it up here. They have allergies.
Clary shivered, though she wasn't at all cold. What kind of flowers are these?
Jace shrugged and sat down, carefully, next to a glossy green shrub dotted all over with tightly closed flower buds.
No idea. You think I pay attention in botany class. I'm not going to be an archivist. I don't need to know about that stuff.
You just need to know how to kill things?
He looked up at her and smiled. He looked like a fair-haired angel from a Rembrandt painting, except for that devilish mouth.
That's right.
He took a napkin-wrapped package out of the bag and offered it to her.
Also, he added, I make a mean cheese sandwich. Try one.
Clary smiled reluctantly and sat down across from him. The stone floor of the greenhouse was cold against her bare legs, but it was pleasant after so many days of relentless heat. Out of the paper bag, Jace drew some apples, a bar of fruit and nut chocolate, and a bottle of water. Not a bad haul, she said admiringly. The cheese sandwich was warm and a little limp, but it tasted fine. From one of the innumerable pockets inside his jacket, Jace produced a bone-handled knife that looked capable of disemboweling a grizzly. He set to work on the apples, carving them into meticulous eighths.
Well, it's not birthday cake, he said, handing her a section, but hopefully it's better than nothing.
Nothing is what I was expecting, so thanks.
She took a bite. The apple tasted green and cool.
Nobody should get nothing on their birthday.
He was peeling the second apple, the skin coming away in long, curling strips.
Birthday should be special. My birthday was always the one day my father said I could do or have anything I wanted.
Anything? She laughed. Like, what kind of anything did you want?
Well, when I was 5, I wanted to take a bath in spaghetti.
But he didn't let you, right?
No, that's the thing. He did. He said it wasn't expensive, and why not if that was what I wanted? He had the servants fill a bath with boiling water and pasta, and when it cooled down, he shrugged, I took a bath in it.
Servants? Clary thought. Out loud, she said, how was it?
Slippery.
I'll bet.
She tried to picture him as a little boy, giggling up to his ears in pasta. The image wouldn't form. Surely Jace never giggled, not even at the age of 5.
What else did you ask for?
Weapons, mostly. He said, which I'm sure doesn't surprise you. Books. I've read a lot on my own.
You didn't go to school?
No, he said.
And now he spoke slowly, almost as if they were approaching a topic he didn't want to discuss.
But your friends...
I didn't have friends, he said. Besides my father, he was all I needed.
She stared at him. No friends at all? He met her look steadily.
The first time I saw Alec, he said, when I was 10 years old, that was the first time I'd ever met another child my own age. The first time I had a friend.
She dropped her gaze. Now an image was forming, unwelcome in her head. She thought of Alec the way he had looked at her.
He wouldn't say that.
Don't feel sorry for me, Jay said, as if guessing her thoughts, though it hadn't been him she'd been feeling sorry for. He gave me the best education, the best training. He took me all over the world, London, St. Petersburg, Egypt. We used to love to travel.
His eyes were dark.
I haven't been anywhere since he died. Nowhere but New York.
You're lucky, Clary said. I've never been outside this state in my life. My mom wouldn't even let me go on field trips to D.C. I guess I know why now, she added ruefully.
She was afraid you'd freak out, start seeing demons in the White House.
She nibbled a piece of chocolate.
There are demons in the White House?
I was kidding, said Jace, I think.
He shrugged philosophically.
I'm sure someone would have mentioned it.
I think she just didn't want me to get too far away from her. My mom, I mean. After my dad died, she changed a lot.
Luke's voice echoed in her mind. You've never been the same since it happened, but Clary isn't Jonathan.
Jace cocked an eyebrow at her.
Do you remember your father?
She shook her head. No, he died before I was born.
You're lucky, he said.
That way you don't miss him. From anyone else, it would have been an appalling thing to say, but there was no bitterness in his voice for a change, only an ache of loneliness for his own father. Does it go away? She asked. Missing him, I mean. He looked at her obliquely, but didn't answer.
Are you thinking of your mother?
No, she wouldn't think of her mother that way. Of Luke, actually.
Not that that's actually his name.
He took a thoughtful bite of apple and said,
I've been thinking about him.
Something about his behavior doesn't add up. He's a coward. Clary's voice was bitter.
You heard him. He won't go against Valentine. Not even for my mother.
But that's exactly... A long, clanging reverberation interrupted him. Somewhere, a bell was tolling.
Midnight,
said Jace, setting the knife down. He got to his feet, holding his hand out to pull her up beside him. His fingers were slightly sticky with apple juice.
Now, watch.
His gaze was fixed on the green shrub they'd been sitting beside, with its dozens of shiny closed buds. She started to ask him what she was supposed to be looking at, but he held up a hand to forestall her. His eyes were shining.
Wait, he said.
The leaves on the shrub hung still and motionless. Suddenly, one of the tightly closed buds began to quiver and tremble. It swelled to twice its size and burst open. It was like watching a speeded-up film of a flower blooming, the delicate green sepals opening outward, releasing the clustered petals inside. They were dusted with pale gold pollen as light as talcum.
Oh, said Clary, and looked up to find Jace watching her. Do they bloom every night?
Only at midnight, he said. Happy birthday, Clarissa Frey.
She was oddly touched.
Thank you.
I have something for you, he said.
He dug into his pocket and brought out something, which he pressed into her hand. It was a gray stone, slightly uneven, worn to smoothness in spots.
Huh, said Clary, turning it over in her fingers. You know, when most girls say they want a big rock, they don't mean, you know, literally a big rock.
Very amusing, my sarcastic friend. It's not a rock, precisely. All Shadowhunters have a witchlight runestone.
Oh.
She looked at it with renewed interest, closing her fingers around it, as she'd seen Jace do in the cellar. She wasn't sure, but she thought she could see a glint of light peeking out through her fingers.
It will always bring you light, said Jace,
his voice a little rough. She slipped it into her pocket.
Well, thanks. It was nice of you to give me anything.
The tension between them seemed to press down on her like humid air.
Better than a bath in spaghetti any day.
He said darkly, if you share that little bit of personal information with anyone, I may have to kill you.
Well, when I was 5, I wanted my mother to let me go around and around inside the dryer with the clothes, Clary said. The difference is she didn't let me.
Probably because going around and around inside a dryer can be fatal, Jace pointed out, whereas pasta is rarely fatal, unless Isabel makes it.
The midnight flower was already shedding petals. They drifted toward the floor, glimmering like slivers of starlight.
When I was 12, I wanted a tattoo, Clary said. My mom wouldn't let me have that either.
Jace didn't laugh.
Most shadow hunters get their first marks at 12. It must have been in your blood.
Maybe, although I doubt most shadow hunters get a tattoo of Donatello from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles on their left shoulder.
Jace looked baffled.
You wanted a turtle on your shoulder?
I wanted to cover my chicken pox scar. She pulled the strap of the tank top aside slightly, showing the star-shaped white mark at the top of her shoulder. See? He looked away.
It's getting late, he said. We should go back downstairs.
Clary pulled her strap back up awkwardly, as if he wanted to see her stupid scars. The next words tumbled out of her mouth without any volition on her part.
Have you and Isabel ever dated?
Now he did look at her. The moonlight leached the color out of his eyes. They were more silver than gold now.
Isabel? He said blankly.
I thought... Now she felt even more awkward. Simon was wondering.
Maybe he should ask her.
I'm not sure he wants to, Clary said. Anyway, never mind, it's none of my business. He smiled unnervingly.
The answer is no. I mean, there may have been a time when one or the other of us considered it, but she's almost a sister to me. It would be strange.
You mean Isabel and you never...
Never, said Jace.
She hates me, observed Clary.
No, she doesn't, he said, to her surprise. You just make her nervous because she's always been the only girl in a crowd of adoring boys, and now she isn't anymore.
But she's so beautiful.
So are you, said Jace, and very different from how she is, and she can't help but notice that. She's always wanted to be small and delicate, you know. She hates being taller than most boys.
Clary said nothing to this because she had nothing to say. Beautiful. He'd called her beautiful. Nobody had ever called her that before, except her mother, which didn't count. Mothers were required to think you were beautiful. She stared at him.
We should probably go downstairs, he said again.
She was sure she was making him uncomfortable with the staring, but she didn't seem to be able to stop. All right, she said, finally. To her relief, her voice sounded normal. It was a further relief to look away from him as she turned around. The moon, directly overhead now, lit everything nearly to daylight brightness. In between one step and another, she saw a white spark struck off something on the floor. It was the knife Jace had been using to cut apples, lying on its side. She jerked hastily back to avoid stepping on it, and her shoulder bumped his. He put a hand out to steady her, just as she turned to apologize, and then she was somehow in the circle of his arm, and he was kissing her. It was at first almost as if he hadn't wanted to kiss her. His mouth was hard on hers, unyielding. Then he put both arms around her and pulled her against him. His lips softened. She could feel the rapid beat of his heart, taste the sweetness of apples still on his mouth. She wound her hands into his hair, as she'd wanted to do since the first time she'd seen him. His hair curled around her fingers, silky and fine. Her heart was hammering, and there was a rushing sound in her ears, like beating wings. Jace drew away from her with a muffled exclamation, though his arms were still around her.
Don't panic, but we've got an audience.
Clary turned her head. Perched on a nearby tree branch was Hugo, watching them beadily from bright black eyes. So the sound she'd heard had been wings rather than demented passion. That was disappointing.
If he's here, Hodge won't be far behind, said Jace under his breath. We should go.
Is he spying on you? Clary hissed. Hodge, I mean?
No. He just likes to come up here to think. Too bad. We were having such a scintillating conversation.
He laughed soundlessly. They made their way back downstairs the way they had come, but it felt like a different journey entirely to Clary. Jace kept her hand in his,
sending tiny electrical shocks traveling up and down her veins from every point where he touched her. Her fingers, her wrist, the palm of her hand. Her mind was buzzing with questions, but she was too afraid of breaking the mood to ask him any of them. He'd said, too bad, so she guessed their evening was over, at least the kissing part. They reached her door. She leaned against the wall beside it, looking up at him. "Thanks for the birthday picnic," she said, trying to keep her tone neutral. He seemed reluctant to let go of her hand.
"Are you going to sleep?"
"He's just being polite," she told herself. Then again, this was Jace. He was never polite. She decided to answer the question with a question. "Aren't you tired?" His voice was low.
"I've never been more awake."
He bent to kiss her, cupping her face with his free hand. Their lips touched lightly at first, and then with a stronger pressure. It was at precisely that moment that Simon threw open the bedroom door and stepped out into the hall. He was blinking and tousle-haired and without his glasses, but he could see well enough. "What the hell?" he demanded, so loudly that Clary leapt away from Jace as if his touch burned her. "Simon, what are you... I mean, I thought you were... asleep?" "I was," he said. The tops of his cheekbones had flushed dark red through his tan, the way they always did when he was embarrassed or upset.
"Then I woke up and you weren't there, so I thought..."
Clary couldn't think of a thing to say. Why hadn't it occurred to her that this might happen? Why hadn't she said they should go to Jace's room? The answer was as simple as it was awful. She had forgotten about Simon completely. "I'm sorry," she said, not sure who she was even speaking to. Out of the corner of her eye, she thought she saw Jace shoot her a look of white rage. But when she glanced at him, he looked as he always did, easy, confident, slightly bored.
"In future, Clarissa," he said, "it might be wise to mention that you already have a man in your bed, to avoid such tedious situations."
"You invited him into bed?" Simon demanded, looking shaken.
"Ridiculous, isn't it?" said Jace. "We would never have all fit."
"I didn't invite him into bed," Clary snapped. "We were just kissing."
"Just kissing?"
Jace's tone mocked her with its false hurt.
"How swiftly you dismiss our love."
"Jace." She saw the bright malice in his eyes and trailed off. There was no point. Her stomach felt suddenly heavy. "Simon, it's late," she said tiredly. "I'm sorry we woke you up."
"So am I."
He stalked back into the bedroom, slamming the door behind him. Jace's smile was as bland as buttered toast.
"Go on, go after him.
Pat his head and tell him he's still your super special little guy. Isn't that what you want to do?" "Stop it," she said. "Stop being like that." His smile widened.
"Like what?"
"If you're angry, just say it. Don't act like nothing ever touches you. It's like you never feel anything at all."
"Maybe you should have thought about that before you kissed me," he said.
She looked at him incredulously. "I kissed you?" He looked at her with glittering malice.
"Don't worry," he said. "It wasn't that memorable for me either."
She watched him walk away and felt the mingled urge to burst into tears and to run after him for the express purpose of kicking him in the ankle. Knowing either action would fill him with satisfaction, she did neither, but went warily back into the bedroom. Simon was standing in the middle of the room, looking lost. He'd put his glasses back on. She heard Jace's voice in her head saying nastily, "Pat his head and tell him he's still your super special little guy." She took a step toward him, then stopped when she realized what he was holding in his hand. Her sketch pad, open to the drawing she'd been doing, the one of Jace with angel wings.
"Nice," he said. "All those Tisch classes must be paying off."
Normally, Clary would have told him off for looking into her sketch pad, but now wasn't the time. "Simon, look.
I recognize that stalking off to sulk in your bedroom might not have been the smoothest move," he interrupted stiffly, tossing the sketch pad back onto the bed. "But I had to get my stuff."
"Where are you going?" she asked.
"Home. I've been here too long, I think. Mundanes like me don't belong in a place like this."
She sighed. "Look, I'm sorry, okay? I wasn't intending to kiss him, it just happened. I know you don't like him."
"No," Simon said even more stiffly. "I don't like flat soda.
I don't like crappy boy band pop. I don't like being stuck in traffic. I don't like math homework. I hate Jace. See the difference?
He saved your life, Clary pointed out, feeling like a fraud. After all, Jace had come along to the Demort only because he'd been worried he'd get in trouble if she got herself killed.
Details, said Simon dismissively. He's an asshole. I thought you were better than that.
Clary's temper flared.
Oh, and now you're pulling a high and mighty trip on me? She snapped. You're the one who was going to ask the girl with the most rockin' bud to the fall fling.
She mimicked Eric's lazy tone. Simon's mouth thinned out angrily.
So what if Jace is a jerk sometimes? You're not my brother. You're not my dad. You don't have to like him. I've never liked any of your girlfriends, but at least I've had the decency to keep it to myself.
This, said Simon between his teeth, is different.
How? How is it different?
Because I see the way you look at him, he shouted. And I never looked at any of those girls like that. It was just something to do, a way to practice until...
Until what?
Clary knew dimly that she was being horrible. The whole thing was horrible. They'd never even had a fight before that was more serious than an argument about who'd eaten the last Pop-Tart from the box in the treehouse. But she didn't seem able to stop.
Until Isabel came along? I can't believe you're lecturing me about Jace when you made a complete fool of yourself over her.
Her voice rose to a scream.
I was trying to make you jealous,
Simon screamed right back. His hands were fists at his sides.
You're so stupid, Clary. You're so stupid. Can't you see anything?
She stared at him in bewilderment. What on earth did he mean?
Trying to make me jealous? Why would you try to do that?
She saw immediately that this was the worst thing she could have asked him.
Because, he said, so bitterly that it shocked her, I've been in love with you for 10 years, so I thought it seemed like time to find out whether you felt the same about me, which I guess you don't.
He might as well have kicked her in the stomach. She couldn't speak. The air had been sucked out of her lungs. She stared at him, trying to frame a response, any response. He cut her off sharply.
Don't. There's nothing you can say.
She watched him walk to the door as if paralyzed. She couldn't move to hold him back, much as she wanted to. What could she say? I love you too? But she didn't. Did she? He paused at the door, hand on the knob, and turned to look at her. His eyes, behind the glasses, looked more tired than angry now.
You really want to know what else it was my mom said about you? He asked.
She shook her head. He didn't seem to notice.
She said you'd break my heart, he told her, and left.
The door closed behind him with a decided click, and Clary was alone. After he was gone, she sank down onto the bed and picked up her sketchbook. She cradled it to her chest, not wanting to draw in it, just craving the feel and smell of familiar things, ink, paper, chalk. She thought about running after Simon, trying to catch him. But what would she say? What could she possibly say?
You're so stupid, Clary, he'd said to her. Can't you see anything?
She thought of 100 things he'd said or done, jokes Eric and the others had made about them, conversations hushed when she'd walked into the room. Jace had known from the beginning.
I was laughing at you because declarations of love amuse me, especially when unrequited.
She hadn't stopped to wonder what he was talking about, but now she knew. She had told Simon earlier that she'd only ever loved 3 people, her mother, Luke, and him. She wondered if it was actually possible, within the space of a week, to lose everyone that you loved. She wondered if it was the sort of thing you survived or not. And yet, for those brief moments, up on the roof with Jace, she'd forgotten her mother, she'd forgotten Luke, she'd forgotten Simon. And she'd been happy. That was the worst part, that she'd been happy. Maybe this, she thought, losing Simon, maybe this is my punishment for the selfishness of being happy, even for just a moment when my mother is still missing. None of it had been real anyway. Jace might be an exceptional kisser, but he didn't care about her at all. He'd said as much. She lowered the sketchbook slowly into her lap. Simon had been right. It was a good picture of Jace. She'd caught the hard line of his mouth, the incongruously vulnerable eyes.
The wings looked so real, she imagined that if she brushed her fingers across them, they'd be soft. She let her hand trail across the page, her mind wandering, and jerked her hand back, staring. Her fingers touched not dry paper, but the soft down of feathers. Her eyes flashed up to the runes she'd scrawled in the corner of the page. They were shining, the way she'd seen the runes Jace drew with his steely shine. Her heart had begun to beat with a rapid, steady sharpness. If a rune could bring a painting to life, then maybe... Not taking her eyes off the drawing, she fumbled for her pencils. Breathless, she flipped to a new clean page and hastily began to draw the first thing that came to mind. It was the coffee mug sitting on the nightstand next to her bed. Drawing on her memories of still life class, she drew it in every detail, the smudged rim, the crack in the handle. When she was done, it was as exact as she could make it. Driven by some instinct she didn't quite understand, she reached for the cup and set it down on top of the paper. Then, very carefully, she began to sketch the runes beside it. Chapter 18. The Mortal Cup. Jace was lying on his bed pretending to be asleep, for his own benefit, not anyone else's, when the banging on the door finally got to be too much for him. He hauled himself off the bed, wincing. Much as he'd pretended to be fine up in the greenhouse, his whole body still ached from the beating it had taken last night. He knew who it was going to be before he opened the door. Maybe Simon had managed to get himself turned into a rat again. This time, Simon could stay a goddamn rat forever, for all he, Jace Wayland, was prepared to do about it. She was clutching her sketchpad, her bright hair escaping out of its braids. He leaned against the doorframe, ignoring the kick of adrenaline the sight of her produced. He wondered why, not for the first time. Isabel used her beauty like she used her whip, but Clary didn't know she was beautiful at all. Maybe that was why. He could think of only one reason for her to be there, though it made no sense after what he'd said to her. Words were weapons, his father had taught him that, and he'd wanted to hurt Clary more than he'd ever wanted to hurt any girl. In fact, he wasn't sure he had ever wanted to hurt a girl before. Usually he just wanted them, and then wanted them to leave him alone. "Don't tell me," he said, drawing his words out in that way he knew she hated. "Simon's turned himself into an ocelot, and you want me to do something about it before Isabel makes him into a stole. Well, you'll have to wait till tomorrow. I'm out of commission." He pointed at himself. He was wearing blue pajamas with a hole in the sleeve. "Look, jammies." Clary seemed barely to have heard him. "Jace," she said, "this is important." "Don't tell me," he said. "You've got a drawing emergency. You need a nude model." "Well, I'm not in the mood. You could ask Hodge," he said, as an afterthought. "I hear he'll do anything for..." "Jace," she interrupted him, her voice rising to a scream. "Just shut up for a second and listen, will you?" He blinked. She took a deep breath and looked up at him. Her eyes were full of uncertainty. An unfamiliar urge rose inside him. The urge to put his arms around her and tell her it was all right. He didn't. In his experience, things were rarely all right. "Jace," she said, so softly that he had to lean forward to catch her words. "I think I know where my mother hid the mortal cup. It's inside a painting." "What?" Jace was still staring at her as if she'd told him she'd found one of the Silent Brothers doing nude cartwheels in the hallway. "You mean she hid it behind a painting? All the paintings in your apartment were torn out of the frames." "I know." Clary glanced past him into his bedroom. It didn't look like there was anyone else in there, to her relief. "Look, can I come in? I want to show you something." He slouched back from the door.
"If you must."
She sat down on the bed, balancing her sketch pad on her knees. The clothes he'd been wearing earlier were flung across the covers, but the rest of the room was neat as a monk's chamber. There were no pictures on the walls, no posters or photos of friends or family. The blankets were white and pulled tight and flat across the bed. Not exactly a typical teenage boy's bedroom. "Here," she said, flipping the pages until she found the coffee cup drawing. "Look at this." Jace sat down next to her, shoving his discarded t-shirt out of the way.
"It's a coffee cup."
She could hear the irritation in her own voice. "I know it's a coffee cup."
"I can't wait till you draw something really complicated,
like the Brooklyn Bridge or a lobster. You'll probably send me a singing telegram.
She ignored him.
Look, this is what I wanted you to see.
She passed her hand over the drawing, then, with a quick darting motion, reached into the paper. When she drew her hand back a moment later, there was the coffee cup, dangling from her fingers. She had imagined Jace leaping from the bed in astonishment and gasping something like, "Egad!" This didn't happen, largely, she suspected, because Jace had seen much stranger things in his life, and also because nobody used the word "egad" anymore. His eyes widened, though.
"You did that?"
She nodded.
"When?"
"Just now, in my bedroom, after Simon left." His glance sharpened, but he didn't pursue it.
"You used runes. Which ones?"
She shook her head, fingering the now blank page. "I don't know. They came into my head, and I drew them exactly how I saw them."
"Ones you saw earlier in the Grey Book?"
"I don't know." She was still shaking her head. "I couldn't tell you."
"And no one ever showed you how to do this? Your mother, for instance?"
"No, I told you before. My mother always told me there was no such thing as magic."
"I bet she did teach you," he interrupted, "and made you forget it afterward. Magnus did say your memories would come back slowly."
"Maybe."
"Of course."
Jace got to his feet and started to pace.
"It's probably against the law to use runes like that unless you've been licensed. But that doesn't matter right now. You think your mother put the cup into a painting, like you just did with that mug?"
Clary nodded. "But not one of the paintings in the apartment."
"Where else? A gallery? It could be anywhere."
"Not a painting at all," Clary said. "In a card." Jace paused, turning toward her.
"A card?
You remember that tarot deck of Madame Dorothea's? The one my mother painted for her?" He nodded. "And remember when I drew the Ace of Cups? Later, when I saw the statue of the angel, the cup looked familiar to me. It was because I'd seen it before, on the Ace. My mother painted the mortal cup into Madame Dorothea's tarot deck."
Jace was a step behind her.
"Because she knew that it would be safe inside these wards, and it was a way she could give it to Dorothea without actually telling her what it was, or why she had to keep it hidden. Or even that she had to keep it hidden at all. Dorothea never goes out, she'd never give it away. And your mother was ideally placed to keep an eye on both it and her."
Jace sounded almost impressed.
"Not a bad move."
"I guess so."
Clary fought to control the waver in her voice.
"I wish she hadn't been so good at hiding it."
"What do you mean?"
"I mean, if they'd found it, maybe they would have left her alone. If all they wanted was the cup."
"They would have killed her, Clary,"
Jace said. She knew he was telling the truth.
"These are the same men who killed my father. The only reason she may still be alive now is that they can't find the cup. Be glad she hid it so well."
"I don't really see what any of this has to do with us," Alec said, looking blearily through his hair. Jace had woken the rest of the Institute's residents at the crack of dawn and dragged them to the library to, as he said, devise battle strategies. Alec was still in his pajamas, Isabel in a pink peignoir set. Hodge, in his usual sharp tweed suit, was drinking coffee out of a chipped blue ceramic mug. Only Jace, bright-eyed despite fading bruises, looked really awake.
"I thought the search for the cup was in the hands of the Clave now." "It's just better if we do this ourselves," said Jace impatiently. "Hodge and I already discussed it, and that's what we decided."
"Well," Isabel tucked a pink-ribboned braid behind her ear, "I'm game."
"I'm not," Alec said. "There are operatives of the Clave in this city right now looking for the cup. Pass the information on to them and let them get it."
"It's not that simple," said Jace.
"It is simple." Alec sat forward, frowning.
"This has nothing to do with us and everything to do with your addiction to danger."
Jace shook his head, clearly exasperated.
"I don't understand why you're fighting me on this."
"Because he doesn't want you to get hurt," Clary thought, and wondered at his total inability to see what was really going on with Alec. Then again, she'd missed the same thing in Simon. Who was she to talk?
"Look, Dorothea doesn't trust the Clave, hates them, in fact. She does trust us."
"She trusts me," said Clary. "I don't know about you. I'm not sure she likes you at all."
Jace ignored her. Come on, Alec, it'll be fun. And think of the glory if we bring the mortal cup back to Idris. Our names will never be forgotten.
I don't care about glory, said Alec, his eyes never leaving Jace's face. I care about not doing anything stupid.
In this case, however, Jace is right, said Hodge. If the Clave were to come to the sanctuary, it would be a disaster. Dorothea would flee with the cup and would probably never be found. No, Jocelyn clearly wanted only one person to be able to find the cup, and that is Clary, and Clary alone.
Then let her go alone, said Alec. Even Isabel gave a little gasp at that. Jace, who had been leaning forward with his hands on the back of a chair, stood up straight and looked at Alec coolly. Only Jace, Clary thought, could look cool in pajama bottoms and an old t-shirt, but he pulled it off, probably through sheer force of will.
If you're afraid of a few Forsaken, by all means, stay home, he said softly.
Alec went white.
I'm not afraid, he said.
Good, said Jace. Then there's no problem, is there?
He looked around the room.
We're all in this together.
Alec mumbled an affirmative, while Isabel shook her head in a vigorous nod.
Sure, she said. It sounds fun.
I don't know about fun, said Clary. But I'm in, of course.
But Clary, Hodge said quickly, if you are concerned about the danger, you don't need to go. We can notify the Clave.
No, Clary said, surprising herself. My mom wanted me to find it, not Valentine and not them either.
It wasn't the monsters she was hiding from, Magnus had said.
If she really spent her whole life trying to keep Valentine away from this thing, this is the least I can do. Hodge smiled at her.
I think she knew you would say that, he said.
Don't worry anyway, Isabel said. You'll be fine. We can handle a couple of Forsaken. They're crazy, but they're not very smart.
And a lot easier to deal with than demons, said Jace.
Not so tricksy.
Oh, and we're going to need a car, he added, preferably a big one.
Why, said Isabel, we've never needed a car before.
We've never had to worry about having an immeasurably precious object with us before. I don't want to haul it on the L train, Jace explained.
There's taxis, said Isabel, and rental vans.
Jace shook his head. I want an environment we control. I don't want to deal with taxi drivers or mundane rental companies when we're doing something this important.
Don't you have a driver's license or car?
Alec asked Clary, looking at her with veiled loathing. I thought all mundanes had those.
Not when they're 15, Clary said crossly. I was supposed to get one this year, but not yet.
Fat lot of use you are.
At least my friends can drive, she shot back. Simon's got a license.
She instantly regretted saying it.
Does he? Said Jace, in an aggravatingly thoughtful tone. But he hasn't got a car, she added quickly.
So does he drive his parents' car? Jace asked.
Clary sighed. No, usually he drives Eric's van, like to gigs and stuff. Sometimes Eric lets him borrow it for other stuff, like if he has a date.
Jace snorted.
He picks up his dates in a van. No wonder he's such a hit with the ladies.
It's a car, Clary said. You're just mad Simon has something you haven't got.
He has many things I haven't got, said Jace. Like nearsightedness, bad posture, and an appalling lack of coordination.
You know, Clary said, most psychologists agree that hostility is really just sublimated sexual attraction.
Ah, said Jace blithely. That might explain why I so often run into people who seem to dislike me.
I don't dislike you, said Alec quickly.
That is because we share a brotherly affection, said Jace, striding over to the desk.
He took the black telephone and held it out to Clary.
Call him.
Call who? Clary said, stalling for time. Eric? He'd never lend me his car.
Simon, said Jace. Call Simon and ask him if he'll drive us to your house.
Clary made a last effort.
Don't you know any shadow hunters who have cars?
In New York.
Jace's grin faded.
Look, everyone's in Idris for the Accords, and anyway, they'd insist on coming with us. It's this or nothing.
She met his eyes for a moment. There was a challenge in them, and something more, as if he were daring her to explain her reluctance. With a scowl, she stalked over to the desk and snatched the telephone out of his hand. She didn't have to think before dialing. Simon's number was as familiar to her as her own. She braced herself to deal with his mother or one of his sisters
but he picked up on the second ring.
Hello?
Simon? Silence. Jace was looking at her. Clary squeezed her eyes shut, trying to pretend he wasn't there. It's me, she said.